Welcome to the ISD Podcast. The ISD Podcast is our contribution back to the community, where we discuss vulnerabilities of interest, information security-related news, hopefully providing you with a few laughs and a little bit of knowledge. And now, here are the hosts of your show, Rick Hayes and Matthew Shoemaker.
Hey, it's ISD Podcast. It's episode 125. It's May 7th, Friday. So, damn, I'm already sounding like fucking Eeyore. I didn't mean to do that. Did I just drop an F-bomb? I think did I do that?
Yeah, we just got the explicit tag.
That's all right. I see the little dimple there. So anyways, I'm your host, Rick Hayes, and I'm joined by
Matthew Schumann.
So, I got to tell you, man, I enjoyed the 2 hour and 10 minute drive home.
I don't know. Oh, my God. Atlanta sucks.
So, you know it's bad when, when I'm riding, like, in the shadows of semis because it's so freaking hot. And I had this lady look over at me and go, "Hot, isn't it?" It's like, what? Yeah, it's hot. And she's sitting there and she's fanning herself. And I'm like, yeah, but you could roll up your windows and put your air conditioning on.
Or were you on your bike?
Yeah.
Did you have all your gear on?
Oh, yeah. It was 100 degrees when I came through town.
Well, better to sweat than bleed, bro.
I've done both, my friend.
Yeah. I saw some idiots. Of course, you know, go fast bikes, right? T-shirts, shorts. Tennis shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, not this. Not me, man.
Huh.
Road rash kind of scares me.
I've only done
the idea of my flesh, you know, getting eaten by the road.
Yeah. So, anyways, man, it's Friday, so let's stop.
Now that we've set the tempo.
I was going to say, now. So we have a special guest, and he's probably dropped off going, Jesus Christ, I'm probably going to have to slit my wrist. So, yeah, so get all that stuff out, and then...
So emo, man.
Yeah. I guess I'll have to.
I guess if there's nothing else ever to do, we could just move on to the announcements.
I'm just painting my fingernails right now. So let's move on with the announcements. So, Scott Moulton's MyHardDriveDiet.com data recovery class is going to be held in San Diego. Beautiful San Diego. And that's going to be in 3 days. May still be seats available. Scott, if you want to find out, just call 678-445-9007 and talk to Scott directly. That runs May 10th through the 14th in San Francisco. Is June 14th through the 18th, which is, it's still cool out there. So, it's never really warm in San Francisco. So, is it?
I don't know, man.
Oh, okay.
I've only been to North California.
Great freaking co-host I got here. I don't know, man. Just going to leave you hanging. So, Atlanta, we know July is hot, so it's going to be hot here. July 12th through the 16th, then Dallas, Texas, October 11th through the 15th. Finishing up the year in D.C., December 6th through the 10th. Be sure to ask for the ISD podcast or mention ISD podcast to get a discount. And so you can go to myharddrivediet.com for more information or email Scott directly, and we have his email address in our show notes. Now you can go and freaking finish your stuff.
Like, so Sands here in Atlanta, Security 566 implementing and auditing the 20 critical security controls. That runs May 17th through the 21st. And Jason Lawrence's mentoring program for Forensics 508 Computer Forensics and Investigations. That's June 22nd for 10 weeks to August 24th. Check out sands.org. And don't forget to use ISD Pod 15 for a 15% discount.
Cool. So the Atlanta ISSA chapter is hosting a CISSP workshop that's going to run May 26th through August the 14th. That's an actual preparation for the August 15th exam. That's going to be held twice a week on Mondays. And God damn, I do it every freaking time. I don't know why I read it. I see Wednesday and I say Monday. It's Wednesday and Friday. I'm going to start making you do this announcement. Why don't you take that one then? Finish
all
it
right,
up.
So it's out at the Glendenning Building, which is the north side of Atlanta, Kennesaw State University, for the CISSP workshop, free of charge for Metro Atlanta ISSA members. So for further information, contact Ben Scholes, Director of Training, at training@gaissa.org. And don't forget the ISSA International Conference. That's September 16th. And check out ISSA.org for details. It's here in Atlanta.
Okay.
You want the next one?
I think I can handle that. So the second annual North Alabama Cybersecurity Summit is being hosted by the North Alabama ISSA chapter at the ADTRAN facility in Huntsville. That's going to be June 9th. The event is open to the public, but if you're an ISSA member, you get a discount of $35 versus the normal $50. For more information, go to the URL in our show notes. So, unlike Matthew, I don't have to freaking say www.
Dubs.
Dubs. So, anyways, before he drops off, we actually do have a special guest on with us tonight. So, let's see. You interviewed with Chris and them. I've heard you on EL. So he's been on several podcasts, but the important one is obviously Exotic Liability, as far as we're concerned. So he's been so. Anyways, we have Iftok. Oh God, I already screwed it up. So it's Iftok.
There you go.
Ian, Amit, and so we're just going to call him Ian. So Ian. Why don't you? I had in here in our show notes that all of the standard stuff about you, but you're a speaker at DEF CON, Black Hat Europe. You're going to do First Conference in Miami, PH Neutral, AFCON, yep. BrewCon, ExcaliburCon. But more importantly, you drive a CBRRR, so that's kind of everything else is really irrelevant. But
so you just wipe out my entire reputation because I no longer drive a CBR 900RR. Yeah, I know. I'm a family man now, so I had to lose that. I had to ditch the road bike.
Oh.
She held the love in hostage.
You know.
The things we do for love. So anyways, and why don't you tell us a little bit how you kind of got started, a little bit of your background, but more importantly, how did you get your start in information security?
All right. I actually started with computers back when my parents bought me like a Commodore 64 when I was a little kid. And my dad's excuse for buying me this was that there are a lot of like educational software for math and stuff like that. And I just, you know, played around, played games, and for some reason ended up trying to hack this thing, coding stuff and programming and building games, and that was not enough, so I kind of tore it apart. I guess that's where it all started. Ever since then, I've been breaking computers and electronics for fun, and at some point of time, they started paying me for that, so that's basically it, I guess.
And obviously you are from Israel, so
and
we were told.
If you haven't figured it out by the like bad broken accent, I'm from Israel.
And that's a pretty big country, right?
Oh, it's huge. It's like almost the size of half of New Jersey, I guess.
So obviously you've served in the military over there, and did you get any formal training in information security while you were in the military?
Nope. In the military, I started up in the Air Force, like a lot of good guys do, and I dropped out of flight school, ended up in the Armored Corps, finished my service, did an extra year because I was an officer, and when I got back to when I finished my Army service, I wanted to get back to computers because the only computer I saw during that four-year service was mainly the tanks one. I was looking up for, you know, to get back to programming and computer stuff, and I found Linux. And that eventually got me into a position where someone told me, look, the stuff you know about Linux by just programming and playing with stuff is probably worth something in the consulting business. So that's how I started doing consulting on security in Unix and Linux systems.
Okay, so then you walked into companies wearing orange Bermuda pants, sandals, and silver toned nail polish.
I admit, and sandals. Yes. So, yep.
And you basically told them how bad their security sucked.
Yep.
Okay.
That's about it.
And got paid money. And got paid money to do that. Obviously.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was fun. I still do that, but nowadays my outfit of choice is usually a suit and tie, and you know. But so, essentially, it's the same thing.
So, in all seriousness, so you actually got it started, I guess, doing more. Was it Linux security, or was it you know, tailored to one particular discipline?
Well, it started off as Linux, and I ventured off pretty quickly to networking, doing mainly like firewall, routing, switches. Eventually hit Windows as well, and basically everything that can break,
mm-hmm.
I've touched or tried to break.
Okay, and so obviously I kind of ran across you with your presentation that you had presented at Black Hat Europe.
Yep.
So, yep. Which was obviously, as you and I have talked about, this is something that was near and dear to my heart. But in talking to Chris, I've kind of changed my mind on this, and so he swayed me over to his side. So,
all right.
So. Which was funny because I was in agreement with you at first, arguing with him, and then I was very much swayed over to his side. So for those people that don't really know, would you like to give a background on what your talk was about and kind of how you did your research and came up with because there's some great information in here. So would you mind doing that?
Sure, no problem. Well, by the way, the talk is called Cyber War Crime. Connecting the dots, and the background for it is pretty interesting, because in the past 3 or 4 years I've been focusing mainly on cybercrime, you know, looking at what do criminals do, how they create the software, how they manage it, how does it distribute it, how they get their victims, and so on and so forth, and essentially how they make money, and that's been my kind of main focus in terms of research and my contribution to the security business. And in the past year or so, I've started seeing some links between traditional cybercrime, which is essentially revenue focused. I mean, these guys are not going to do anything without some kind of monetary value immediately obvious to them, with stuff that was not immediately obvious as revenue generating, like trading with arms related information and country and government related information, and that kind of spurred me to look into that area. And what I ended up finding is that there are a lot of links between cybercrime and what appears to be cyber warfare related activities, sponsored or engaged or I don't know, attributed to governments. So I got back, I did some research, I connected the links that I was privy to in terms of cybercrime back to material and data that was related to cyber warfare. So that's what the talk is essentially about. It's showing how those cyber warfare events, starting back from you know, early China stuff through the stuff that went on in Georgia, in Estonia, and so on and so forth, and then to the recent China events, and shown how those are related, or shown the links between the government-sponsored or the government interest events to cyber criminal groups that actually initiated or executed those things.
Yeah, I like that.
It's pretty interesting.
I did like how you brought up Titan Ring, because that's something that we've kind of discussed. but, yeah, so that in what was it, Moonlight Maze? Mm-hmm. But, you know, and of course I think Operation Aurora kind of gets chunked into that too, but... So that's an interesting talk, and I guess one of the things that kind of Chris and I talked about, and I actually listened to the podcast, and you kind of seem to agree with him too. So maybe he's just got a some kind of magical way of getting people to agree with him. But and I swear I didn't have a roofie or anything, so I actually remember. But so the thing is, and you know, when we kind of have this discussion, we always have to sit around and we have to freaking say, all right, now, so when we're talking cyber war, this is the definition. By definition, this is what we mean. So we have to basically try to fit something that doesn't really fit. So this is basically a round peg square hole kind of deal. That we're trying to shove something in and it just doesn't fit.
And, yep,
and
you're
so,
right.
And so he's like, hey, I don't know what you call it, but there's something going on, but it's certainly not warfare. And so as I got thinking about it and started, you know, he's absolutely right. I don't know that renting a botnet is necessarily an act of war.
I agree with you here. I mean, I'm going to be the last person that's going to be hung up on definitions and so on and so forth. Actually, during my presentation, I kind of start off with, all right, what's the definition of cyber war? And by the end of it, I completely trash it. So, you know, I'm with you.
Yeah.
go ahead.
Yeah, I need to have this debate then, because, I mean, I've got a pretty clear definition of it. And so, like, in that scenario where a country would engage or, you know, fund a botnet for malicious activity, well, that's just mercenary. And mercenaries have been employed by countries for, forever.
And this is exactly what I provide as an example during my talk. I'm saying, look, governments have been doing this and are doing this for a long time. I mean, engaging with Haiti, gray area, you know, arms dealers and mercenaries to do their dirty business. And this is exactly what's going on in the cyber, world. Yeah.
We've debated this ad nauseum. But I hate to loop back, but when you talk about arms, are you talking about, like, dispositions? Are you talking about secret squirrel weapons designs or
Anything from trading AK-47s, you know, unregistered, whatever it is, to dealing with rockets and missiles and shit like that, you know, to actually sending guys over, like, what you call here, the guys that were getting paid to do the Iraqi stuff back at the beginning.
You mean
Blackwater
at the time, yeah. And now it's what do they call them?
Yeah, the guys that show up in hot, sandy places with ponytails and blue jeans. And
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, but they're not called Blackwater anymore. They're called, what, Z?
Oh, I don't know.
Isn't it? It's yeah, it's Z. Yeah. They used to be Blackwater. So, yep. Anyways, I wanted to talk to you about Zeus.
Zeus, of all things.
Of all things.
Okay.
I happen to have heard Zeus brought up today, and I happen to know that you may have done some research on it and debugging on it, so kind of wanted to get your take on it, because it actually kind of plays into this, because you obviously wouldn't have Zeus if it wasn't generating profits for somebody.
Yeah, well, my interaction with Zeus started back in the days when I was researching cybercrime. Zeus is a very popular Trojan, rootkit, whatever you want to call it, that's being utilized by criminals to sift anything from financial information to personal information and all the way up to conducting, like, very specific targeted attacks against companies. I've seen Zeus deployed in several ways, as I mentioned before, anything from, like, mass infection schemes all the way down to very specific targeted attacks. I really like it because it's flexible. You know, you get a pretty nice management system. You get a nice configuration system to deploy and create the Trojan binaries. And it's pretty effective. It bypasses most AVs.
So I guess one of the things that obviously you've got is I mean, so it's not necessarily bulletproof, but it's dang as close as you're going to get. And, I mean, that's kind of been developed, right?
Yeah, it's pretty up to date. There's a like one group that develops the core Zeus, I would say, branch, and a few groups that kind of leech on that and develop add-ons or modifications to the Zeus code base, mainly adding like extra functionality and trying to resell it for a cheaper price. A lot of guys that deal with cybercrime are privy to, you know, the different Zeus versions, and that group is actually pretty successful. I mean, they're pushing out updates and new versions pretty frequently, and it's pretty cool. I mean, it's useful. It bypasses most AVs. It can generate polymorphic binaries as frequent as you want. So that's like the de facto infection vector, I guess.
So you're saying, I mean, so it's going to continue to evolve because it's got an economic,
there's an incentive here
definitely. I mean, if these guys weren't paid and were not be able to sell their packaged kind of software, no one would develop it. It's pure economy 101.
I think we actually talked about some module, and I was kind of surprised at the price of it. But do you have to go into spouse mode and yes on the EULA when you get this stuff? Or
not exactly, but you know, you have to know the right people. You have to know how to get into the right forums. It's usually a big advantage if you can read, write, or speak Russian. For some reason.
Gee, go figure.
So always have that kind of person on your research team.
Neparuski?
Yeah.
So,
that's about all I know.
You got me there.
So, yeah, we talked about the module and the fact that if you didn't pay the licensing fee, basically it stopped working.
Yeah, these guys have been introducing more advanced license enforcement mechanisms into their software. actually, the first ones that introduced interesting license enforcement mechanisms were the guys from Neosploit, which is an attack toolkit as opposed to Zeus, which is a post-infection, you know, we're going to stay here, Trojan rootkit. The Neosploit guys introduced licensing enforcement by binding your IP that you're going to run Neosploit on to your license key. So that's pretty cool. And had online license verification against their servers going through a SOX proxy. So they would essentially anonymize their actual whereabouts of the license server through a SOX proxy that you had to go through, authenticate, and only then it would the Neosploit installation would hit the actual license server and allow you to run it.
But then your whereabouts were readily available to them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you had to register. You had to kind of provide them with your publicly routable IP address to license your Neosploit installation.
Is it just me, or does that seem counterintuitive?
Yeah.
I mean, that you've got folks who are
underground.
Right. That's my. I mean, if I'm going to do something that I know is like illegal, and yet I'm going to trust these people to you know.
This is a form of mutually assured destruction, right?
Yeah. Well, you're not that underground. I mean, if you're running Neosploit, you're going to essentially hit people people's browsers, so you have to be routable. You have to be accessible to the web. So the only ones you're exposing or publicly announcing your installation of Neosploit is the guys that developed it. So unless you trust them, and obviously you trusted them because you just transferred like $1,000 or $1,500 through PayPal or web money or whatever it is to these guys.
But you're assuming that's actually your credit card that.
Exactly. At that point, if you've got your crap halfway in a pile, it's not your information. You're bleeding to them. So I guess the premise is that IP address that you can migrate it at will.
Well,
so,
I kind of get the point. I mean, hell, if you're doing all that, you probably you're not actually using.
Well, I mean,
your own.
You're kicking off their binary. Right. So.
Yeah, on your server.
Right. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So it's not like you're not totally, I mean, you're going to be screwed if they really wanted to, but they just, like you said, they probably just care about the money more than anything else.
Exactly. And you have to establish some level of trust, so just like any other business.
Yeah, just like any other criminal activity. I mean, so what? You stole something. You still got to take the car to the chop shop.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
So I had initially asked you on and kind of blindsided you with those questions, and I apologize. But one of the things that I had said that I really wanted to talk to you about was the whole this concept of fair.
Yep.
And so for those of our listeners that have no concept other than they think that fair has to do with some kind of tax thing and something like that, could you enlighten all of us as to really what this is and what the premise and the concept is?
Sure. It's pretty simple. FAIR, by the way, stands for a factor analysis of information risk. You can look it up in Google. And basically, it's a methodology that was developed by Jack Jones from, I think, Ohio here in the U.S., that basically says something very simple. We all used to look at information security as something very technical, and us consultants back in the olden days always tried to shy away from that technical thing, because when we went to companies, they were looking at the money. So FAIR, what FAIR basically does is it quantifies the monetary value of risk for every information asset that you have in your organization, and enables you to more easily evaluate what kind of controls you put over those information assets, how much do they cost, and what is the actual value that you can gain from protecting those assets. And we're taking into account direct potential losses and indirect losses like PR damage and law and like legal costs and so on and so forth, and formulate it into something that's more easily managed from a management perspective.
So one of the things that obviously there's if you go on the FAIR wiki, you can actually read a lot more about this. And so yep. Without going too much in depth about it, one of the things that that this kind of does is it basically takes you, instead of, so you go from a, so I'm trying to qualify, you know, the risk to I actually have a quantification of the actual risk.
Definitely. You might qualify a risk as something very, very dangerous and something very, oh my God, we're going to be so screwed if this happens, to a point where you say, well, what if this happens? I mean, what's going to happen? The actual monetary damage of a certain risk might not be as harmful as you might think in terms of qualification. So a SQL injection or a cross-site scripting or even losing some kind of document might not be that damaging financially, as opposed to something that you overlooked in terms of the technical qualification aspects that may be very, very damaging to your organization. So it helps you kind of prioritize what to look after, what to protect, and how to protect it in terms of investing in security controls over it.
So one of the things that I kind of picked up from this is, you know, we always talk about, we say, hey, as information security, you know, professionals, our job is to really evaluate the risk and inform our management of the risk. And then, you know, so I think one of the things that this is obviously going to do is it helps you really at this point speak to a manager to be able to make, or to your management, so that they will fully understand the impact of that assessment and the risk as it relates to the business. But one of the things that, you know, we kind of go through as we start to do all of this is that we talk about, you know, well, that there's a, you know, there's a chance that that could happen. And if the chance that it could happen, then we need to do this. And so, generally speaking, we tend to overspend on some things and forget about the actual, as Chris says, you know, when he was on, he was talking about the fact that, hell, it really doesn't matter if you don't protect what you do, what you have to have to make money as your mm-hmm. business. Yep. It's irrelevant. At the end of the day, if that's lost, it makes no difference in the world. If you're PCI compliant, or you've got your SAS 70, or whatever, or you're even FISMA compliant, it doesn't matter if you don't protect those crown jewels. And so that, you know, as you start looking at this, I think that it kind of helps you really start to identify that, quite frankly, that's the asset that I need to put the most money on. And I did like the fact because I was reading the PDF and I was seeing how you could go and start to model some stuff and actually do like the worst case scenario for a particular one and then say, whoa, if I wanted to fix that because I wanted to change the, you know, the control that I have in place, that could countermand what the threat is. So it kind of so therefore it impacted the vulnerability. So it goes just from a, well, we have a vulnerability because Microsoft says we have a vulnerability, we need to patch it. And it doesn't matter that, well, yeah, but you're behind firewalls and IPSs, and it's not even connected to the internet. And, oh, in fact, it's actually off on its own subnet that's completely isolated. So what's the threat at that point? Because you have all of these controls in place, so is the vulnerability truly there?
And, exactly. It helps you, again, qualify and quantify the actual threat, the actual loss, and the controls that you have or you want to put onto that asset into something that you can kind of look at the big picture and say, well, that's okay, or, well, we need to put some more controls over that. So that's the cool thing about it.
Yeah, and I have to say, so Rick introduced me to some of this stuff, you know, just kind of prepping for the show, you know, what's this guy about and the rest of it. And so, I mean, I've got books on the shelf about security engineering and the rest of it, and those things have always kind of pissed me off because you have this incredibly complex math, and then invariably there's some arbitrary value shoved into it all. Right?
Yeah.
And so, and I'm a real black and white kind of guy, and so I have a really hard time speaking to management because I can't not say that, you know, when they ask me what is this based on, you know, what is the math? Okay, you've got this great model. Where is it from? And I just refuse to lie.
well, that's the other thing about FAIR, or from my perspective, the other thing that's missing a lot of times from the security business is the understanding of the business. This really forces us as security professionals to look at the business and say, well, what is the business really based on? I mean, what are the core assets? What are the crown jewels? What is the business operating on in terms of assumptions and core assets? So it gets us back away from the technical, you know, this vuln, that vuln, Microsoft, Sun, whatever it is, to how does this business make money? What is important? And from my perspective, it's critical to tie those two pieces together in terms of one side understanding how the business operates and the other side understanding the technical kind of groundwork on which the business operates.
So you kind of hit on something there. So you're talking about how the business operates.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your recommendation to someone new in an information? Say they're just coming in and they're trying to get their feet wet. They're starting up a new information security group or whatever, or they're taking over one. What would you recommend as a way? Would you recommend they start trying to implement this right away, or what would be your recommendation?
My recommendation would be to shut down your PC, go talk to the CFO, go talk to the COO, talk to the accounting guys on, you know, where do we make money off, what's the company structure, how are we registered, do we have like sub-companies, how does the sales operation work, and so on and so forth. Really understand how the business works. Derive from that or interview all those people to get a real understanding on what does this business do. Later on, match all of those interviews and match all of that data that you've gathered with the IT infrastructure, with the computers, with everything else. And only at that point, turn on your PC and start working on, you know, how do these two tie together? What do I need to protect? And start doing your job.
It's funny you mention that because I've obviously in building up a department, I think the mistake I made was just kind of heads down. I'm, you know, hammering out policies and then trying to figure out if that wasn't the right way. Didn't take very long to figure that one out because that kind of met with a stone wall. But then you start looking at the risk, and it was interesting that you mentioned close your PC and walk around, because if you start walking around and talking to people, obviously you're going to learn, you know, yeah, this is a problem we've got, this is an issue, and so I think that you could start to map those out as those are concerns that people, you know, have within the corporation. Mm-hmm. And so obviously at some point in time, whether it has an impact on the business or not, at least if you kind of somehow or another are mapping that and trying to make sure that you're keeping track of, this is something that somebody sees as a risk, and does it impact the core business operations, and is it something that information security should handle? That's obviously something that could be fed into your whole process of building up a structure. I mean, wouldn't you say that would be a fair assessment?
Yeah, definitely. Again, talk to people, get their feeling on how things work. Talk to the customers, talk to the end users, how they use the systems. You might find that they're using the system in a completely different manner than you intended to, or than the technical department designed it to. And these are the places where you'll find the real critical security holes in terms of how are we going to lose money, or how are we going to lose face in terms of the industry or even the business itself.
Yeah,
I have to say this is really timely for me, because, I mean, I'm not I've kind of graduated to the role of the glass is half empty or half full, or you need a half a glass. I've gone straight to the glass is full of gasoline. You know, and so and I mean, straight up, the technical aspects of it just really enthrall me. I love sinking myself into it. I love getting into the minutia of, you know, the technology. Mm-hmm. But I also recognize that if I'm going to stay in this business, that I'm definitely going to have to develop a stronger business perspective on the technology. And this couldn't have been more timely for me, and I appreciated it. I may be a victim of circumstance, but
no, dude, I think we all kind of fall into that Chicken Little thing at first. As we, you know, we get involved in the technology and we start saying, "Holy crap, this is so messed up!" And then it's that, you know, sky's falling, and then so we maybe are reactionary, and sometimes we react, you know, on the extreme, which now makes us, instead of being...
Well, it's hard not to, right?
Oh, no, dude.
With your laptop and like, let me show you how I can destroy your business quick.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but so the point, I think, is so we want to be relevant, right? I mean, don't we want to be something that's relevant to the business and not somebody that just sits over in a corner and says, well, you know, the Eeyore...
Everything is fucked.
Everything. Right? Holy shit, everything's falling down. You know, I mean, you got to be...
Well, certainly. Yeah, if we don't have relevance, we have no purpose.
Thank you. So I think you got to go from the whole Chicken Little to this, where you do have to be relevant, and you need to speak the lingo. I think that's something, in just talking to Ian, that, you know, man, we all struggle in our careers, and we see things, and it's like, crap, I should have never done that, or I needed to learn this. And so I think if you can pick that up and say, wow, whether you use this model or not, is as long as you kind of, I guess, understand the principles is really, I guess, the way I see it. Because, I mean, there are people that are like, I don't give a crap about frameworks.
The freak show in the basement that runs the firewalls? I mean,
No. No. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's just that we need to step out of that basement once in a while and realize where am I working at, and actually learn something new that's not technical and not Perl or Python or, you know, looking at packets. It's looking at how a business operates, and it might be my business right now, and in 2 years it might be a completely different business. I mean, that's, I think, something that's really cool about security, that you have to learn constantly. Not only the technical stuff, but also, you know, when you move from one place to another every year, 2, 5, 10, whatever it is, what am I dealing with? What's the business? What's the environment I'm dealing with?
Yeah, I mean, think about it, dude. I don't know, Ian, I know you weren't out at Outer Zone, but there was a talk that was basically on at Outer Zone that was talking about the fact that we suck as security professionals. We really suck.
Because
it basically kind of laid out that we can't. We can talk about, you know, hell, I can tell you how to write an ACL. I can tell you how to configure VPN concentrator, you know, with my eyes closed. But when it comes to having the business acumen to be able to speak and convey that same information, I, you know, and not that a CO, you know, a CXO, whatever, needs to know about a VPN, but they need to know that there's a threat, and you need to say it in a very succinct manner that they understand. And going through and saying the firewalls are all screwed up and the VPN concentrators are going down, and you know what? They're having security association issues, and you know, they don't give a crap about that.
No. They shouldn't, I think.
Oh, no, believe me, they shouldn't, but and I'm not saying they should, but the whole premise of that was that, you know, we need to learn to say the things that our management, to convey it in a way that our management understands, where we're actually saying kind of the same thing, that we need to replace this, and here's the reason why. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not going into
to,
all
you
the...
You need to show a value. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I think that this thing's got some I think it's cool. I think it'd be interesting to continue to do some research on it and see how it could be implemented. And obviously there's a good framework, so it looks like Jack has done some wonderful work. How did you come across this out of curiosity?
Well, when I turned back to consulting after my last job while I was working for a vendor, I was talking with some friends from the old consulting days, and they turned me onto this framework, and I said, like, wow, that's great, but we've been doing that, you know, 10 years ago when we were consulting, you know, for a living. And my friend was like, yeah, right, that's why it's cool. So so it kind of just fit the bill at the right place at the right time, I guess.
I did like that. I don't know if you saw the ball tire scenario.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, that, I just kind of thought that was funny. So the asset's the ball tire. So basically, if you have a car and you have a ball tire, how much risk is there? And I kind of equate it, because obviously riding a motorcycle, it's like, well, if I've got a ball tire and I'm riding a motorcycle.
Yeah. On a motorcycle.
Yeah. it's the risk is increased exponentially. I will put it that way.
Yep. It's a very interesting kind of a thought drill in terms of how to quantify risk and how to evaluate it. So definitely read that and do it yourself.
So cool. So real quick, I know we've gone over and I apologize, but so if people want to catch you at a conference, where can they – obviously we'll have a link to your blog, but where can they see you?
Well, if you're friends of FX, I'll be at the end of the month speaking at PH Neutral in Berlin. Later on in Athens, in Greece, beginning of June. I'll be in Miami mid-June for the first conference. And definitely at BrewCon in September. I'm definitely coming in for DEF CON and B-Sides. And most probably, if you're in China, I'll be there as well in September.
Cool. And, of course, your blog is
iamit.org/blog. That's iamit.org/blog.
Well, you are it, sir.
I am it.
You are it. So, listen, man, we appreciate you joining us and taking time to come. I'm sorry.
Real quick. Go ahead, man. So this is something I kind of did a few times, and I want to do real quick before we sign out.
I'm sorry.
Any recommended reading? All right. This is not a big surprise, but fudsec.com, that's FUDSEC.com, great blog. Again, putting like the rubber to the road. This is the real shit, and people talking about fear, uncertainty, and doubt, real cool stuff.
Cool. Well, I think we'll make that one of the stock interview questions.
Yeah. Should have told me that before I joined in.
Yeah. I didn't even think about it. And I mean, I'm sorry for catching you flat-footed, but you know, it's always interesting to see what people consider resources, and evidently there's a tendency to be a reader in this. I mean, I don't know anybody, well, any guys, any good that I respect that don't read voraciously, whether it's blogs or books or. And not all of it's security related, but I mean, almost all of them are hardcore reader types.
Yeah, I can send you my like 80, 90, you know, sources, RSS feed that I usually read every day, but just FUDSEC kind of came up in this specific context. So it's a pretty cool read.
I prefer knee jerk reactions.
Yeah, there you go.
I read Hustler and Playboy, so I don't know what y'all
are. I knew you were going there. Managed to avoid it.
So anyways, Ian, thank you for coming on and taking the time, especially on a Friday night. I know you're a busy man, so we certainly appreciate it. And hopefully we can have you back some other time and have a good time out there at, I guess, down in Miami. Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope
that's
so.
Dangerous times for you, I'm sure.
And nice talking to you, man. Yeah, enjoyed it.
All right, so thank you.
All right,
good night, guys.
Bye.
Be good.